Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.
Blake, have you received any new job offers lately?
Toby, someone asked me if I'd be interested as the lead audio guy at a church, and truth is funnier than fiction.
Welcome to the Church Gear Podcast, where we pull the tech out of the booth and onto the stage to share the most outlandish stories and hidden wisdom from the tech trenches. And now, here are your hosts.
I'm your host, Blake Hodges, a man who recently realized that recruiters don't check into your background that often or that thorough before they offer you a job. And I'm here with my co-host who has turned down 50 job offers in the past 2 days, Toby Walters.
I was thinking you were going to say that I didn't check anything or any references before hiring you.
You didn't, did you? Because you were your own reference?
I guess, because you were in my small group.
For only a year and a half. That's
I know.
Not that long.
And nobody liked you at first. Like, you were an acquired taste, Mr.
Well,
Hodges.
I would hope to think of the 12 people my wife liked me, but that's debatable as well.
That's debatable. Everybody loved and adored your wife, and still do, but
that's because
yes.
She brought peach cobbler.
So somebody asked if you wanted to, or if you would considering, you would consider applying for a lead audio position at a church?
Yes, like literally 15 minutes before this, and we all had a good laugh, but it does beg the question, we're not going to out them, but we kind of should, because no one should use this recruiter if they're this unthorough.
I feel like this is a beautiful moment for the podcast for you to actually apply for the job and see what happens.
See, here's the problem with that. If it would only negatively mess with the recruiter who didn't do his homework, I would not mind that. But obviously this church is like, I would be interviewing, wasting their time. So if we could get them in on it and then they're messing with the recruiter, I think that would be quite hilarious.
I'm just imagining you going to your first interview, like flying out to this church and them giving you a sample mix to work on and what it sounds like.
Have you ever seen Catch Me If You Can?
Oh yeah. I love that movie.
I would just look at one of them and be like, well, Let's see what you recommend here, and I'll tell you what you're doing wrong, and just pull one of the people interviewing me in to mix it for me. That'd be my play.
I mean, if we could get like Dave or Drew or any number of our guests, including the one on today, to like actually coach you ahead of time, I mean, I'm sure it'd be a little bit better. But as soon as you get there and realize it's a mixer that you're not familiar with, like it wasn't the one you trained on, you'd be lost.
Here's what I would do is I would just have in some AirPods and I would tell them it was my hearing aids. And then I would have Dave and Drew, one in each ear, just coaching me the whole time
there
on the
is.
Console.
There it is.
It's like Mission Impossible. It would totally work.
So I actually dreamed of being a like mix engineer when I was a teenager. That was my dream. And I did live at church, and I grew up at a very small church. So it was not a very exciting opportunity for a live environment. In a live environment to mix in. I've mixed for, you know, a handful of concerts and festivals, but I fell in love with the studio. Like the things, the creativity that I could come up with in the studio and mixing, like all the automations and plugins and crazy stuff. And I'd read Mix Magazine as a kid all the time. And as a kid, I mean, like, you know, I was 18, 19 years old. And some of the like mainstays in the industry, like Bob Clear Mountain and, Chris Lord-Alge. None of these guys mean anything to you, Blake, even though you're the one who is being requested to interview for lead audio positions.
What can I say? Talent is undeniable.
And so, I don't even know what to say to that, but my dreams sort of like fizzled out, I would say, but that's a bad way to put it. It's like God had different plans for my life, which are awesome. And as I now, like, when I go to live events or I listen to records, I kind of shake my head knowing I could have never actually accomplished the artistry that they're pulling off in some of these things. It's phenomenal. And do you listen to other, what, podcasts and think, gosh, I wish I could be as funny as that person?
No, because I actually am just, every time I watch stand-up, this is a real problem for me. I think, what am I doing? I could do this. I should write this down, like the things I think about, and I could make millions of dollars. And then I could buy church gear. It'd be perfect.
I'm just imagining you on stage delivering stand-up, and I'm wondering, like, can you get the timing right? It's all about the delivery. Or is it kind of this funny thing where the audience is in on it now and they realize that you're the joke, much like the Church Gear podcast, but you don't know it?
I mean, everybody loves a court jester. And speaking as someone who would be the king to my court jester, the front of house engineer for We the Kingdom and lead actor on the Netflix drama You, Daniel Ellis. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hello, everyone.
And Daniel, just to clarify, have you ever seen the show You on Netflix?
Nope, never heard of it. Didn't know it existed. But you showed me a picture of this guy that looks like me, and I kind of see it.
I was going to say, I it's a shame you haven't seen it, because then you'd know the great compliment you were just paid to be looking like Penn Badgley, who my wife openly says in front of me how hot he is when we watch the show. Do y'all's wives ever do that to you when you're watching something?
I mean, look at Daniel and I and then answer that question for yourself, Blake.
I mean, I could say no, that for Daniel. She
usually just says, you look better than that guy.
Oh my gosh.
No, mm-hmm. Actually, that's a complete lie.
You had us, though. Well, and speaking of lies, let's do our Five Truths and a Lie segment to introduce Daniel and see if he can fool us. Toby, I've been on a hot streak recently. I've been keeping track of them. I've gotten a lot of points.
Seriously?
Yes.
Man, you really have to keep track of your wins because they're so few and far between.
Hold on. I think he's cheating, though.
That's the thing. Toby doesn't keep track. I do, so.
I think he's cheating because he had me send these to him yesterday, so he's had time to look at it and think about it.
Oh, I've had my AI chatbot analyze all of them and analyze Daniel's vast social profiles that he posts about every hour. So.
And is this the same ChatGPT that writes all your content?
Oh, yeah, totally. ChatGPT will help me with my job for a while until it replaces me. So I do appreciate it.
I look forward to that day. I hear ChatGPT is a little cheaper than you and a little less mouthy.
I don't know. You should look at those software packages. My $12,000 a year is not that much anymore now. All right, number one, got kicked out of audience for MTV TRL.
What's TRL stand for, Blake?
Tragically reductive language. What is TRL?
Is that the real world?
No, but that maybe there's a show called that also. I think it's the Total Request Live.
Oh, with, it was like the Carson. Top,
yeah,
Daly?
Carson Daly, top 10 music videos back in the day.
Blake, this was when you were like 3 years old.
Well, what a good time that was to be alive. Goldfish and I'm not gonna say the rest of that.
Didn't they film it in New York and you'd have a live audience? And
I believe so.
Okay, he can't necessarily say whether or not because we don't know yet.
Number two. Snuck into Universal theme park after hours with David Crowder. I believe that 100%.
I could see him and Crowder like in cahoots sneaking into a theme park.
Speaking of Crowder, number three, put raw shrimp and cheese in someone's suitcase as a prank.
Was it Crowder's suitcase? Is that what you're suggesting?
I think whenever I hear Crowder, I always think of clam chowder, and shrimp is kind of like clams. So that's where that all came from.
Okay. Didn't when we had Q on the podcast, you said Crowder, clam chowder or something like that?
Yep.
And did you trademark that?
I did. I've been selling them. That's what I actually do when I'm working remote for Church Gears.
Got
selling
it.
That chowder.
Perfect.
Number four, started in production as a lighting guy at my church.
See, that's what Corey Edwards did. So are we just believing that he started that trend before Corey?
Yes.
That's what we all do.
Yep.
That's what everyone does.
So is Corey Apple? He doesn't do the new thing. He just does the established thing better. Is that what I'm hearing?
Now you're saying that Corey's better than Daniel, so
look,
we're in a fight on our hands.
I'd rather be first than better.
I mean, Corey lives like 10 minutes from
really
me.
Really good
so.
At everything. I may have started as a lighting guy. We'll find out.
Okay.
He's not giving us anything in his face.
But yeah. It doesn't mean that I know anything about lights. Corey could have done lights 100 years ago and still knows how to do it. I don't understand that.
You know, and it's shocking that Corey's been alive for 100 years, looks as good as he does. I think it's all that raw chicken liver that he eats.
Just raw liver.
Oh, gosh. Oh, so we don't know whose liver it is.
Nope.
Be careful on them streets. Number five, once kicked Chris Tomlin out of front of house at a show.
So I could see like Chris coming back and just trying to mess with his mix and Daniel being like, look, get out of here. Who are you even?
Well, I was going to say it feels like he jokingly did it. I hope this was an actual altercation. Six and finally.
And I've met Chris a few times, so I can't imagine him getting into an altercation like this because he's
met Chris Tomlin?
Yeah, a handful of times, like just the nicest guy.
He's a pretty
guy,
nice guy.
Like.
It was either Chris or Phil Wickham that I peed next to at the factory at the urinals. I don't remember which one, though.
They look wildly different, so
Which they're both pretty short. Oldest.
Well, are you sure it
attractive?
Wasn't Stephen Curtis Chapman or Michael W. Smith?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it could have been Chapman.
Now, Tomlin is older than Phil Wickham, but both of them are very good-looking guys.
Oh, gosh. I should have like, committed this to memory. Sixth and finally, toured with the Goo Goo Dolls. I don't know how dolls are playing music, but maybe they were eating Goo Goo clusters.
Blake, do you know who the Goo Goo Dolls are?
I do not know who the Goo Goo Dolls are.
I don't go Goo Goo for the
dolls. Right now.
Daniel, have you heard the rumors of Blake's lack of pop culture knowledge?
I've heard. I listened to a couple of these podcasts just so I'd see what I was getting myself into. And
you still showed up.
Most of them are about how Blake knows nothing about things that happened 10 years ago.
You ever heard of a long con, Daniel? Or a hustle?
Is this you?
In a couple of years, we're going to bet big money that I can outmix Lee Fields, and I'm going to crush him. Going to blow people away.
Love it. I'm going to be there for that.
Okay, Toby, what's your heart?
I don't even know where to begin because you don't know who the Goo Goo Dolls are.
I'm going to say that he did not. I'm going to lock in early. That raw shrimp and cheese in someone's suitcase, that is cruel.
That is mean.
If he did that, that person better have like framed him for murder. So I'm going to say number three is the lie.
I'm going to say he did not get kicked out of the audience at the MTV's TRL because I feel like what would you have to do to get kicked out of an audience for TRL?
Probably try to break into front of house?
Maybe.
All right,
Tomlin.
We're locked in.
I'll tell you what you have to do to get kicked out of TRL. When the camera is panning the audience and you see them coming towards you, you stick your finger in your nose right before he gets to you.
Is picking a booger a crime?
I didn't even pick a booger. I stuck my finger in my nose, and within 2 seconds, this huge security guy literally grabbed me by my shirt, threw me outside. I was there on a school field trip. We just randomly got tickets into the audience. I have it on video somewhere. I'll have to show you someday.
Oh, please send that.
Blake, you would never last at TRL. You're constantly picking boogers.
Listen, they say that it leads to Alzheimer's, and if I can't remember anything, then I can, you know, reread all my favorite books. It'd be great.
Boogers lead to Alzheimer's? Is that what you're saying?
Have y'all not seen this? If you pick your nose, they have now made a connection that it increases your odds of getting Alzheimer's.
Interesting.
I'm not kidding.
Okay. We'll be Googling that after the episode.
You should.
Great.
Okay, so then what was your lie?
I was absolutely never a lighting guy. Oh. I don't have time for that crap.
I really thought about that.
That was kind of my first intuition, thinking like, that's the cheap one. Like, everything else is fun, but that one's kind of boring.
Man. Okay.
You know, so he's a sneaky little word we're not supposed to say on Christian podcasts.
Well, he is you from, you know, Netflix, and he is incredibly
that
sneaky
is true.
And murderous.
I have to watch this now.
So tell us about kicking Chris Tomlin out of front of house at a show. Does he still have a boot mark on his butt?
Well, I didn't literally kick him with my foot, but it was a David Crowder show I was mixing, and it's front of house at some church. It was probably in Atlanta. That's probably why Chris Tomlin was there. I remember there's a lot of management and everybody hanging out at front of house, and it was one of those like front of houses in the church where it's in the middle of the aisle and you have to rope it off so people don't walk behind you and talk to you, because I don't need people talking to me while I'm mixing. So I had it all roped off, or actually there were chairs blocking it, and in the middle of the show, it's dark, you can't see what's happening, and somebody kept walking behind me going through front of house, and it was just annoying me because it's like, it's obviously blocked off, you're not supposed to go through here, but this guy, I saw him do it like 5 times. Finally, middle of the show, I'm mixing, I'm like, I can't handle it anymore, so I just like, I see him coming out of the corner of my eye, and I just step back, and I'm just like, you can't come in here. You need to go around. And I didn't know who it was until after I said that. And it's Chris Tomlin. And he kind of smiles a little bit. And he's like, okay, that's fine. And he went around. We didn't know each other. I'd never met him before. He didn't know me. So, and he was just like, all right, this guy doesn't want me here. I'll just go around. He was cool about it. And then 5 minutes later, I saw him on the other side. I'm like, I should go say something. So I went over and I was like, hey, sorry, I didn't know that was you, but.
So he was nice enough to not be a jerk about it, but even to say like, oh, okay, no problem.
Yeah,
I'll go around.
If it was me, I would have been like, hey, I have an all access pass. I'm going through here. But he was just like, okay, I'll go around because he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
This is what Daniel's been paid to say. Chris actually said, you know what I'll do? Walked up, turned the dial on the board. Anything I want. I'm Chris Tomlin. So
that's probably what I would have done.
Yeah. And you guys co-write a worship song together after that?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Huge hit.
Yeah. Wait, did you ever work with him after that?
Yeah. Actually, I've never... Yeah, I did a Christmas tour with him
Did you guys make that connection when you saw each other, or were you like, forget?
I don't know if we ever brought it up again. Mm. I don't think it was ever discussed.
You know, they say in interpersonal communication 101 in college that your first fight is what then leads to a real relationship. So you got it out of the way quick.
What was our first fight, Blake?
I think it was over who was more attractive. The jury's still out on it, but speaking of fights, you must have caused one when you put some raw shrimp and cheese in someone's suitcase as a prank. So what did that person do to you? Goodness.
Well, he didn't do much, actually. Like, what I did was way overkill. And the second I did it, I was like, okay, maybe I took this too far. But it's too late. It's already done. Can't stop it. It's already in motion. So, yeah, this was on Outcry Tour, like 2017, maybe, something like that. During a changeover, I'm up on stage in front of like a few thousand people, like just moving gear around, plugging stuff in. And I don't realize until 10 minutes later after I walk off the stage that there is a kick me sign on my back.
Had you been kicked? You kicked out of front of house that time?
Nope.
Tom was coming for revenge.
No one kicked me. It was pretty small. Probably nobody even saw it, but it made me a little bit mad. It wasn't that big of a deal, but I was just like, well, I'm going to retaliate. I knew who did it, and I knew where his suitcase was. I don't know what happened. Really, I don't know what happened. My brain just, something snapped in my brain, I guess, and I just thought that getting raw shrimp would be the funny thing to do.
To our church check pals that think about being on the road and, you know, the grass is greener, just know that there's raw shrimp on that other side of the grass is greener road.
So I actually, I sent a runner out to get some shrimp, and it's great. She came back with like these shrimps were like 6 inches long. They were the biggest shrimp, or prawns, I guess, or whatever you call them. They're the biggest ones I've ever seen. And they were in a bag with like a little bit of water. It was pretty juicy and disgusting. And I opened the suitcase.
I'm getting hungry here.
I opened the suitcase and I left it in the bag. I'm like, I don't want this juicy shrimp water to go everywhere. So I like left it in the bag and put it in there. But the bag wasn't closed, so that didn't really help much.
Oh.
It got all over everything.
Oh.
Did you end up having to exchange American currency to replace his items?
I should have, but he was nice about it. I thought he was going to kill me or hate me forever, but we're still friends today, or at least he pretends to be my friend. I don't know.
Toby, Daniel knows where we work now, so we're going to have to be nice to him because this is not a man you want to get on his wrong side.
I usually don't bring my suitcase to work, though.
Yeah, but you do bring that little bag that I, you know, hid the other day.
That is true. My laptop bag, which you hung on the wall as a practical joke. That was the dumbest practical joke I've ever seen in my life.
When you watch the video, I think Toby's actually really mad at me. He's like, where is my bag?
I wasn't mad at all. I was shocked at the stupidity of the level of the practical joke.
Oh, goodness.
I'm going to take your backpack, I'm going to hang it on the wall, and then I'm going to film you looking for it for 30 seconds until you find it.
The best part about the shrimp, though, is because there was also cheese. That was the decoy. I put cheese in like a smaller side pocket. Actually, I thought he would find the shrimp and be mad about it, and the cheese might be there for a month, and he wouldn't even know.
But that's brutal.
But what happened was he found the cheese like 5 minutes later, and he's like, ha ha, you got me, I found it, you're funny. And he didn't find the shrimp until the next day.
Oh.
This is horrifying.
It's disgusting.
Were you in cahoots with Crowder on this one too?
No, this was all me. I like pranking people. I do it often, but that was the worst one. And like I said, I immediately knew it was too far, but it's a good story, right?
It was a moment for this podcast.
You were in cahoots with Crowder another time, though. Tell us about sneaking into Universal theme parks after hours, and what did you do, and how much booze was involved?
Well, this was, we were at Hard Rock Live in Orlando, which where the buses park behind the Hard Rock is like right next door to Universal, Islands of Adventure. Actually, I don't remember which one it is. One of the Universal parks. So the bus is parked in this parking lot. There's a 10-foot chain link fence, and on the other side of the fence is Universal. And this chain link fence has like a foot gap at the bottom. So, I mean, it was after the
Naturally.
Show, about probably 1 or 2 in the morning. We're all hanging out, having a good time, and just decided to actually David Crowder. It was his idea. That's what makes it so great. I don't know if I should be saying this
sure
to people. In the world. I mean, whatever.
I mean,
it's fine.
It's not like you vandalized it.
No. Nobody can get in trouble for this. It's a statute of limitations.
And that's also, right. This is a comedy podcast, so you can just claim it was a joke. It's like the news.
It is a joke. This didn't really happen. But David Crowder just decided, like, hey, let's go over here and see what's going on. So he takes off running, and there's like five or six of us crew guys, and maybe some band guys. I don't even remember who all it was, but we're like, hey, okay. So we just started following. We're like, okay, if he's doing it, if the boss guy is doing it, let's just follow him and see what happens. So we crawl under this fence and just... We end up on, like, It's a Small World or something like that. Just
that's creepy.
Little
yep.
Teacup ride. I don't know. I don't even remember. This is so long ago. I don't remember exactly what happened, but we walk in there, and there's, like, a janitor person cleaning up, and she looks over and looks really mad. So we took off running, and, I mean, we were in there for 3 minutes probably. Didn't do much. But on the way out, there's a golf cart making the rounds, doing security.
You jacked the golf cart, didn't
you? We had to actually lay on the ground and hide for a minute while they drove by. We literally just got on the ground. There's a little bit of a hill we kind of ducked behind. Golf cart drives by, and it kind of looked like they were looking for someone. Like maybe they knew, somebody called security or whatever. But they drove by. We went out, and that was it.
I feel like this tracks with just America's perception of Tomlin versus Crowder. You know, Tomlin is the gentle spirit that says, I'm going to stay out of front of house to respect this guy. And Crowder's like, let's break into Disney World. Or
there's a hole in that fence. That's better right. Dive underneath it. The motif here is find a boss that does the dumb stuff you want to do so then you can just do it with them and not get in trouble.
Yeah, have we broken into anything yet?
Oh, we almost broke into that train depot, like little office when we were
Chicago.
Stranded.
Yeah. Okay, so finally onto the Goo Goo Dolls, Blake. I don't even know what to do with you anymore. This was my favorite band on the planet, like in my college years.
So you were Goo Goo for them dolls, huh?
Yes, I was.
Were they beautiful people? Is that what I'm gonna guess?
Well, the lead singer is a beautiful person. Mm. He is a very good looking guy. Were you? What were you doing with the Goo Goo Dolls?
Working for the opening band.
Okay.
So yeah, that's kind of cheating, I guess. We did some shows with the Goo Goo Dolls. I wasn't working for them, which would have been way cooler. But I was working with a band called Copeland, and we did like just a random week of shows with the Goo Goo Dolls, which was incredible because I'm a huge fan of all 90s music. Grew up on it.
Do you remember in that concert seeing the man with his shirt off and I Love Goo Goo Dolls painted on his chest? Because that was Toby.
Oh. You know what? Yeah, I remember that.
Truth is stranger than fiction, Blake.
Exactly. So getting into some weird truth, tell us how you got into mixing. What was like the first opportunity you had to mix for? How'd you get into this world? What fence did you see that you had to shoot underneath?
Well, I started out I've always loved music, just grew up listening to music, playing music. I was in a couple of horrible high school bands that nobody has ever heard of, but we had a lot of fun. And our entire school of 300 people loved us. Mm. Played music for a while, but I hated being on stage. Like, I've just never been the kind of person that wants attention. Like, I don't want people looking at me. Like, there's a camera over here looking at me right now. It's really driving me crazy. I don't like it.
Millions of people are listening to you right now, Daniel.
The only reason I'm talking into this microphone is because I can't hear it coming back into my ears right now. So, anyways, being into music, like, my parents actually were into music a little bit. Like they opened up this little coffee house thing in our town just because me and my brothers were into music. It was kind of a connection we could have with my parents. So that we opened up a little coffee house, kind of had Christian bands coming in every weekend, which turned into this really cool thing. It was a really small room, but we had like a lot of big like tooth and nail bands, and you don't know what that is, but
I do.
So, I mean, they come in with a tooth and a nail and that's their music.
Swing and a miss.
Oh, yeah.
But that's okay.
So a lot of really good bands. So that's where I realized there's like a soundboard in the back that you're still like doing music, but you're in the back of the room where nobody's looking at you. So I started messing around there and kind of just went from there. I realized like I can be in music for the rest of my life and nobody will look at me unless I screw up. Then they're all looking at me.
About to say that you traded stakes because they all look piercing glances.
Yeah, but you usually have a table you can hide under or something.
What was it Josh said? He just lowers his chair.
Yeah.
And Josh is like 6'5", so he's got to lower that chair pretty far.
Yeah, he actually goes down a level into the the floor.
Who was like the, you know, kind of for you, the big moment, the first big artist that you got to be a part of?
For me, it's kind of a long story, but long story short, like there's a band you may have heard of called Isley.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I grew up right down the road from them and their family. So like we were friends, we hung out all the time. So that was the first band I actually got to work with just because we knew each other and we're friends. So I got to go on a tour with them, which was actually like a big national tour, House of Blues and stuff like that, opening up for Brand New, like back in their heyday when they were huge. So that was a lot of fun. I had no idea what I was doing, but I knew enough to get by, I guess. I was doing monitors on that. And then the next thing I did, I convinced the manager of the band Copeland that I could tour manage, which I really had no idea what that meant. I mean, Isley's tour manager, I thought, like, did a terrible job. All he did was get us to the venue on time and get us hotel rooms, but he wasn't even good at that. So I thought, I can do better than that. So I convinced the manager that I could do it. And somehow that worked. And I was with Copeland for a while, tour managing and mixing.
Tour managing and mixing? Dang, dual threat then.
Yeah. Well, it was a lot easier back then. We're just driving around in a 15-passenger van. It's not like the kind of stuff we're doing today, or at least it was like small club tours. Now I'm doing bigger stuff with arenas and whatever. There's a lot of gear and a lot more production to think about, but it was pretty easy. Back then, it was mostly getting there on time and getting a hotel room. Mm.
So if you, starting with Isley, like obviously kind of right place, right time. Those were your buddies. You grew up in the same place. And self-admittedly, you didn't really know what you were doing, but you love music. And then fast forward, now you're mixing for We the Kingdom and arenas. What would you, what are some of the things you would attribute success to along the way? Is it just building relationships or was it you're actually really good at mixing?
I think it's a lot. It's a lot to do with relationships. Every job I've ever had, I got because I knew someone. I've never shown anybody a resume ever. It's all because of who I knew and like the reputation you build from. It's not just mixing. I mean, it's like you have to be likable. You have to be nice to people.
You have to not put shrimp in there.
Right. If I would have done that in the beginning of my career, it would have been over immediately. But I guess I waited long enough where I was able to slip that one in there.
That's kind of a mile marker in your career is at what point can you shrimpify somebody?
Yeah, that was at least 10 years in. You can't just do that right away. I would never hire you.
The 10-year shrimp rule is what we just decided that it's called.
So, Blake, I still have 7 years until you're putting shrimp in my...
Toby, you forget I've been doing marketing since 2012. So...
Not for me.
Yes. Well, hang on. 2016. Oh, dude, you got 3 years left, bro.
Man.
Put some shrimp in cheese.
Get some new suitcases.
I think in the beginning, I knew enough, like, because I liked music. I knew music. I could kind of mix good enough, you know? And I think part of it for me is like, I'm just obsessed with it. I love audio and I just want to be really good at it. So I'd practice when I'm at home. Like I'll just mess with stuff. If I'm ever on a console, I spend as much time as I can just trying to get better. So I think, I mean, I've been doing it for 20 years now, which seems crazy. I've been doing it for a long time. And so I still don't think I'm anything special. I can get by, and sometimes it sounds really good, but sometimes it's still horrible. I mean, you just gotta make it sound good when the right people are watching, then everybody thinks you're good.
And did you have any formal training, or you just cut your teeth in the real world, learned it that way?
Yeah, I did. I went to Full Sail.
Okay.
For they have a 1 year, or back then they had a 1 year degree, just like show production. So I learned a lot of technical stuff there. It's funny, like never really mixed much at all, but you learn all the technical stuff. So then, yeah, the first job I got out of school was with Copeland. The first show I ever mixed was in LA and on this huge console in front of all of management and everybody opening for Switchfoot. And like, I had no idea what I was doing. And I thought like, they're going to, all the management's here, the whole world's here, they're going to hate it, I'm going to go home like tomorrow. But somehow that show worked out, they liked it, and they kept me on for like 5 years.
So let's say, 17-year-old coming out of high school is stopping by the sound booth and saying, man, how can I, you know, do what you do someday? Are you, what's your first recommendation? Are you saying, you know, do something like Full Sail or?
No, that's cool. Not my first recommendation.
You just dropped a pound of shrimp on Full Sail.
I love Full Sail. I don't think it's for everyone. I am grateful for my experience there. I learned a lot. I don't regret going there, but I don't think it's necessary for everyone. And so I think mostly it's about getting out there, getting experience. Like I would tell people, and I tell people this all the time because people ask me this question. I just say, go wherever you're at, go find a local production company. There's going to be one. You may, if you're in the middle of nowhere, maybe you'll have to drive an hour or whatever, but find some local production company and just get in with them. If they're not hiring, go just ask if you can help out at a couple shows. Go work for free once or twice. And then if they see that you want to work and that you're willing to learn, like they'll probably hire you next time.
See, Daniel, I'm still doing the work for free model here at Church Gear, waiting to finally get paid. But
I'm just waiting to see some good work come out of you, Blake.
Oh, brother.
Now, for Blake to prepare for his interview audition with this church that wants to hire him for production lead or audio lead.
Oh, forget the interview. I'm going to smoke it. I'm talking about my long con now to outmix Lee Fields in an open arena in front of his friends.
I'm trying to imagine the band that's playing at an arena level that would trust you to mix for them so that you can prove that you're better than Lee Fields.
This is going
to
be so bad.
Daniel, would you be willing to step aside at a We the Kingdom show so that Blake can prove this long con against Lee Fields?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
Let's do it.
Daniel had 10 years in and he put shrimp in someone's suitcase. At 20 years in, you put Blake on the console. I'm worse than 20 years of shrimp.
Yeah, you definitely stink more.
Cool, but as equally delicious. Okay, so speaking of some tasty things, people love their plugins versus hardware debates. So let's talk about your mixing philosophy.
Yeah, speaking of Lee Fields and Corey Edwards, who have built up a lot of hardware recently.
Oh, have they?
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
They have a lot of really cool toys that I wish I had. But I've always been like kind of a minimalist. Like I don't like having a million plugins or a million pieces of gear. Like it's just too much for my brain to think about. I want everything to be like right here in front of me. Like give me some faders, like give me a channel strip, like an old analog board where everything is right here. I try to keep it as simple as possible. Now I don't, I mean, cause I have a lot of gear and I have a lot of plugins and I use them and they sound great. But, I try not to get carried away. If I feel myself getting carried away, I'll start turning stuff off and just start over.
Oh, wow. Whole reset.
Yeah, I'll have one plug-in, sounds good. I want to do something else, so I add another plug-in, sounds better. And then I want to do something else, so maybe I'll add another plug-in. I'm like, no, this is stupid. That's too many. Let me just start over and try it all with one.
Who was it? Someone else told us that. Like, just turn all your stuff off, start from scratch. Someone said that to us.
I don't remember specifically, but I know when I was a young mix engineer, like, it was always, my thought process was always turn things up to make it sound better. Add more high end, add more bass, add more this and that. And it was, you know, so helpful when guys that, you know, had mixed for 10, 20 years started to say like, no, like pull stuff out and start flat and then figure out like, okay, now what else do I need to lose? And if you listen to some of the greatest mixes on earth, like they're just so simple. And it's so tempting to just, as you said, Daniel, just keep adding more plugins. And you're like, ooh, that's fun. Ooh, that adds a new thing. And then it's like, you're just lost. You're like, what the heck did I do?
Yeah. So recently I've actually I'm trying to get away from Waves completely, which I have. I'm not using Waves at all anymore. And I switched to a Yamaha console and I'm just using onboard stuff, which has been great. Like the stuff on that console sounds really good. I feel like I don't need anything extra, and so it's nice just having it all right there in front of me. And I know I don't have an extra computer that might fail or server or whatever. Like there's no other connections that I'm going to just lose. Like if something goes down, it's the whole console. So I'm not just going to lose this plugin. It's just built in and works.
What console are you on?
PM5, the Rivage.
Oh, Rivage. Okay. Hang on. PM5D. That's different.
That's different. The old,
I was about to say,
the older,
like,
Yamaha.
Oh, okay.
It's cute seeing your little lack of technology brain, like trying to put connections together.
Look, I was trying, but
I know,
you know, bringing it back to church. So what's some tips, some tricks, some hacks that you've learned at your scale from all your touring that you'd advise our church techs to bring into their mixes or practice at their church, other than what we just heard, which is get rid of your plugins and turn everything down?
Honestly, I'd say my biggest piece of advice is, turn stuff off. Stop using, just because a digital console has a compressor on every channel doesn't mean turn it on. Doesn't mean use it. Like when I started touring, it was like clubs where you might have four compressors and you got to decide where you want to use them. And I would, you know, I put them on like kick, bass, vocal, whatever they told me to put it on. Cause I didn't know how to use it. I just put it on and turn it on and thought it was working, which is, I think, what people are doing today. Somebody says, put this on the kick drum. And so you do it and they're like, put this on this and this and this, and you turn everything on and you don't actually know what it's doing. And it's really ruining the sound when you don't know. Because I recently was helping out another church. I just walked in on their console file, like to fill in for someone who's out of town, walk up to the console, like literally every single compressor on every single channel was turned on, infinity to one ratio, like just crushing everything. High pass and low pass were like squeezing everything down, like everything they could use was being used. And literally, I just started turning everything off, and it sounded better. And people came up and were like, what did you do? Like, I undid what was being done here. And I'm not trying to talk bad about anybody that's doing this, because for real, when I started, I did the same thing. You gave me a compressor, and I'm just going to put it on something and turn knobs and see what happens. But if you don't really know what those things are doing, like, don't use them. Like, it's, you don't need it. It can make it better if you know how to use it, but until then, leave it turned off and it'll sound better.
I feel like that was always a battle that I was fighting with myself whenever I used to mix. It's like I would reach for the things that I loved regardless of whether the source needed them or not. It's like, stop and listen to what the source is telling you first before automatically applying, you know, your gut reactions to things.
Yeah.
Sounds like stop, recalibrate, and listen. Make a brand new edition.
Oh, Blake. For a guy that's never even heard of Goo Goo Dolls, you're...
Is that them?
No.
Okay.
No.
That would be amazing.
But I guarantee you don't know who that is.
Well, speaking of the past, let's look to the future. So you're in these big arenas. You've been around now for 2 decades, although your, you know, physical appearance does
and,
not...
And speaking of the future, you sat that. Through his course at Philo a little bit, right?
Hang on, which one? Soundscape?
Yeah, were you in there?
With Zach Brady?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I love Soundscape. I'm like addicted to listening to it because it's so trippy.
You were
dude.
In the room and saw my thing and you didn't know it was me?
You had a hat on, right?
I don't know.
He maybe. Thought you were the guy from You from Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did I look like this?
Dude, honestly, that hat really does make you look different.
See, now to tell the truth, Blake went in there and he was all excited because he heard Soundscape for the first time at MXU's headquarters. And so he's all excited. But then like 10 minutes later, he came out and he's like, I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I went into multiple sessions at Philo and was like, I'm going to learn something. And 5 minutes later, I was like, I'm going to go back to the booth.
That's awesome.
Oh, man. But as I was trying to get to my question before Toby interrupted me, you'll get some shrimp for that later.
I interrupted you with something applicable to your question.
I'm never going to get to ask this. Okay, so tell us about that.
Hey, like, Blake.
Okay, you know what? I quit.
Mute that microphone.
Can you quit a job you don't get paid to do? Okay, so is Soundscape the future of mixing? Are there other things you'd like to tell us about, some trends that you're seeing? You know, you've been around.
What do you imagine it's going to look like in 10 years? What's going to be different?
Oh, man.
I'll tell you what won't be different is him, because he's not aged at all. It's like Paul Rudd over here sitting in front of us.
I do my best. I think Soundscape and like the whole immersive audio thing that a lot of other companies are doing, it, like the L Acoustics, Elisa, and Myers got one. And yeah, I think I think that is going to be in the future. I don't know to what extent. I think right now it's an amazing, amazing thing that's going to be better suited for installs. Like, I think a lot of churches are going to go that direction, and I think that'll be really cool. When churches get a new PA, like, maybe they'll start looking at that. I think that's going to happen a lot. I don't think it's going to be so much on the road.
Are there any tours that you know of right now that are doing immersive?
I'm sure there are a couple. I don't know.
I thought maybe somebody said Billie Eilish is doing immersive.
But I haven't heard about that. Okay. Maybe. But for touring, I think it's just a lot harder because you're in different rooms with different setups, and it's hard. And like bigger tours that are going to be in arenas, it's going to be hard to set that up because you've got the audience like all around you. So part of it is like the speakers have to be around the audience and not. I mean, you can do it without the sides and the backs, but I don't know. It's going to be difficult. Install situation, I think. It's really cool. Like, I loved that I got a chance to do that demo and like mix on it and listen to it. That was a lot of fun. Like, it blew me away. It really blew me away, like, how much better it was.
I'm ready to start the giving campaign for Fellowship to get our stuff upgraded to Soundscape.
Perfect.
I do think it will be helpful in churches, because what do we hear all the time? Like, every three posts on the Church Tech Media Sound page is like, what do I do when people say it's too loud? What do I do when people say it's too loud? You get Soundscape because it doesn't feel loud anymore. Like, that was the thing that really took me about it.
If it's done right.
Oh, I guess that's true. That's true. Well, speaking of something not going right, tell us about it. Tell us a disaster story, Daniel, other than the shrimp.
Oh, that was not a disaster. That was a good time.
That's a success, huh? Tell us a moment when everything went wrong and how you recovered or how you didn't recover.
Let's see. I think one of the most awful things that's ever happened to me in a live show, which, you know, it was probably 5 seconds long, but it felt like an hour. And it's always Waves related for me.
That's why he's gotten rid of all of them.
Listen, I love Waves plugins. I still use them in the studio, but I don't like using them on the road because I've had so many problems. And it seems like everybody else is fine, but it never works for me. I was mixing Jesus Culture. I think we were headlining Outcry Tour. It was a pretty big tour. We're playing in a big church, and their intro to the set is like a pad. So there's, you know, not a whole lot of sound happening. It's just like this long droney pad thing. And they start the show, and I'm like, something sounds a little weird. Like, I wasn't sure what it was. It was working. It just didn't sound quite right. So I was like, all right, we'll see what happens. They get into the song and kind of start building. There's a guitar. I'm like, okay, something's weird. This is not right. Drums come in, and that's when you really notice, like, okay, this something is very, very wrong. And I knew it's something with Waves. So I hit my macro on the digital console that turns Waves off, and got 10 times louder. Everything sounded better. And I'm like baffled. I have no idea what's going on because everything, the meters are in Waves. Everything looks like it's working fine. So I start going one thing at a time, and I'm turning plugins on one at a time. I'm like, okay, that one works. Okay, the one on the vocal works. These all work. What's happening? So then I turned it all on, and it didn't work again. So I turned it all off quickly. So finally, I mean, I'm just like, cursing out Waves, like, your stuff never works, like, this is bull crap, I hate this, I'm never doing this again. And I just like, okay, I'm leaving it turned off. I turned it off, just kind of rebuilt the mix without Waves, and it's fine, we get through. And I'm just sitting here, three songs in, thinking about it, looking at the console, like, what happened? What is going on? And I finally realized it. It was a Waves problem, but it was because I did it.
Oh, no.
I have a C6 plugin on my master bus, and during sound check, I'm doing virtual sound check, playing my mix, and I'm listening to specific frequencies. You can solo a frequency in the C6 and move it around and listen to it. And so after sound check, I forgot to unsolo 2K. So the show starts, and the only thing in the PA is 2K. basically the whole band, 2K. So that's what happened. Everything was working. It was just soloed, and it was my fault, which makes it even worse, because if gear fails, then that sucks, but at least I didn't do it. Mm. This one, I did it, and I had to tell people that it was my fault.
The good old 2K. I'm more of a 5G guy myself, but
and does everybody have the T-Swift song playing in their head? It's me, I'm the problem, it's me.
Oh, that'd be a good meme for that.
You know? And Blake, this will be an opportunity for you when you go audition to this church. When it sounds as bad as it sounds, say, look, at least Daniel Ellis had everything at 2K, so.
Oh, boy. I just can't believe that this guy, like, reached out to me. I mean, what did he do a shotgun approach? Did everyone at Church Gear get a message? Like, did our high schoolers in the shipping department get a, no?
No, I didn't get a message.
You're really making me tempted.
I think Toby set it up.
Now, that would be amazing. Funny.
I do owe you a practical joke, don't I?
What? You went to Taylor Swift without me. I owe you a practical joke.
That wasn't my
son
fault. I was given free tickets by Daniel.
And you did it.
Oh, wait. I told my source. No.
Okay.
Daniel's I had tickets to Taylor.
I was about to be like, oh, yeah. Wait a minute.
We were neighbors. We go way back.
This is ridiculous. You're both getting shrimp. All right. Well, Daniel, you've already dropped a lot of good knowledge on us, so I do feel a little guilty asking you for one last tech takeaway. But alas, that's how we wrap these shows, so I'm going to have to do it. What is a piece of advice that you would give all of our tech directors out there that would make their Sundays easier? No pressure. Other than not playing.
I think I've got a good one. Well, you mentioned the comment about people. What do I do when people say it's too loud or this or that? Like, that, people, I don't understand why that is such a big question. Like, at Philo, I was listening to, I was in all the audio breakouts, and there's a Q&A at the end of each one. And that question came up every single time. Like, what do I do when I'm running sound and the worship leader disagrees on how loud it is or whatever. Like, he says, turn it down, and I do it this way. And I'm like, but I'm the sound guy. I should do it this way. I don't understand why this is so hard to figure out, but just because you're the sound guy doesn't mean you're in charge of everything. You're working for someone else. There's a chain of command. So like, if someone who is above you in the chain of command tells you they don't like it, then you'd change it. It's simple. Like, okay, working for We the Kingdom, like, they're Ed Cash, he's like big time producer guy, he knows what he's talking about, he knows what sounds good. He'll come up and tell me like he likes a lot more reverb than I do, and we talk about it, we go back and forth a little bit, and he's just like it's a conversation. You can have this conversation with your peers, you know. And I turn up more reverb than I want to because that's what he wants, and he's my boss. So that's it. I've been doing sound for 20 years. It doesn't mean I can do it the way I want to. I mean, mostly I can, but if the guy paying my paycheck wants it a certain way, that's what you do. So that's a 10-minute tech takeaway. Basically, like, you're not your own boss. I don't know. I don't know how to word it.
It almost feels like, relieve yourself of the pressure of feeling like you have to be in control and in charge, because there is something freeing about not having to be the one who makes those big calls. So just make the, you know.
Right. And if you completely disagree with them, then in the moment you do what they want, and then you go have that conversation later, like a nice conversation, like asking the question, like, why do you want it this way? Or explain why you think it should be the other way. And if you still disagree, they're still right if they're your boss.
Daniel, you've really made my life miserable now that you've told Toby many times back to back that he's right because he's the boss. So I don't know what we're going to do now, but church is going to burn to the ground.
There's going to be a whole lot more shrimp in suitcases, that's for sure.
That actually, listen, I love shrimp. This is a great threat. I'm very excited.
I'm going to fill your car with shrimp.
It's going to be raw, though.
Hey, listen, I can cook that sucker. I know where the stove is. Well, Daniel, you got anything you want to plug, man? You want to point anybody to your socials or a certain project you got going on? Or are you like, hey, I'm good, leave me alone. I stay on the console and in the back for a reason.
Yeah, I've got Instagram and Facebook, and you can look me up on there. I think it's Daniel Ellis, FOH.
I'll link to it. What about MySpace and your MySpace. AOL account?
I never had a MySpace. I'm not much of a social media guy. I have it. I look at it sometimes. And if you send me a message, I will respond. Mm. If you add me as a friend, I'm I may add you back. I may never write anything on your wall, but if you send me a personal message, I will respond.
What a kind guy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, man, we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Thanks for hanging out with us. We hope to see you back next week for more absurd stories, tech takeaways, and overall buffoonery here at the Church Gear Studios.
Blake, have you ever wondered, like, how many Waves plugins Ross has to put on your voice to make you not sound like a total goof?
Oh, I know how many it is. It's 7. That's God's favorite number and what he intended for me to have on my plugins.
And did you know that Waves actually made a plugin modeled after my voice because it's just so glorious?
Oh my gosh. That sounds like a really bad idea, but now it makes sense why your singing sounds so much sexier than your face.
Excuse me. My wife and my mother say my face are just fine.
Oh, Toby.
Thank you very much. And if you would go on social media and see pictures of my face, you'd know too.
I don't know how we should feel about your mom calling your face sexy, but...
I didn't say she... I said my mom said my face is just fine.
That's not what I heard. speaking of, there's no good segue over to this, but you should think of who's...
Speaking of good faces?
Yeah, who's a friend that has a good face and needs to hear this episode?
I mean, Daniel Ellis has a great face.
Honestly, his face is too good to be in the running for this. So find someone who has a lesser face than Daniel Ellis, but still a good face, and text in this episode and be like, hey, you're going to really need to hear XYZ.
From Daniel Ellis's face.
Yep, that's how it goes. All right, Toby, I'm going to go buy some trim.
So I can put it in your car.
No. Actually, it sounds delicious.
Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church tier.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.